As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century,
join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together. Christy's wearing a hat today that says, "Smile, you matter." And so Ben and I are.
I love it.
It matches
it's
her headphones.
Pink
it's pink.
Yeah. It's happy.
It's a whole getup. I wish you could all see this.
It's a mood. Ben is. Ben, you. How are you been doing? With your condition. Are you sure you should be podcasting?
I don't even want to get into it. I'm doing great. I worked out this morning.
Good.
So everything.
What did
fine.
You work out?
Yeah.
Look at you.
What muscle groups?
Went to the gym.
Are you curious about that?
I thought you just worked something
out.
Like how to make gravity more money or
like a math equation.
Or a math equation.
Yeah. I was just thinking about some stuff. Yeah, I worked out. I worked out my shoulders this morning.
You know what?
Yeah. And my
I've gone on record about this, Ben, but your shoulders need no more working out. They're very well put together. So much so that if you touch Ben's shoulder and you touch it without decelerating your hand as you come down to touch, you may hurt your hand. You could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It could be problematic.
It is true. I am built like a blacksmith.
So. Yes. Christy, I think.
Just got to get rid of this guy.
Maybe we've talked about this before, but if you lived 400 years ago in a small English village, What would your job or role have been? Ben would be a blacksmith. Mm.
Right, I'd be the village blacksmith.
My role would be pastor. I'd be the first British pastor from 400 years ago.
That's awesome.
First woman. they'd be like, we don't believe women can be pastors, but Christy's so good at this that we
may have
don't
started
even care.
A whole. You know, England had all those wars: War of the Roses, Hundred Years' War, the 14-day skirmish. The Lord's War, you know, they had all these wars. That would have started another
Christy
one.
Becoming the vicar would have started a war.
Yeah.
I'd say, would you like a spot of tea and a crumpet? And then I'd tell them about Jesus.
and you'd be wearing a hat that says smile
and
you matter.
I'd be wearing a hat. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, today is my dad's birthday.
Oh.
And we are doing a murder mystery. And
of course
I get to dress up from like the 1800s, so not 400 years ago. But we're
200?
Like wearing costumes, and it's going to be this Western
like a Victorian
theme. And
oh, it's Western. Okay.
It's great. Western. So I get to be Bobby the Banker, Bobby with an IE. I'm wearing a. Yeah. Anyway, it's ridiculous. I'm sure our listeners don't want to hear, but it's really fun, and I'm excited.
Yeah. It's yet another adventure in the Penley household.
So
organized by Christy.
Maybe I'd be a banker 400 years ago.
Maybe Bobby the banker.
Bobby. Oh my goodness. Anyway.
Yeah. Huh. Well.
Well, anyway, we could probably just get into it. Yeah. Casey sure. Tigrette.
Yeah.
Yeah. This interview, we've had Casey on the podcast before. Casey is a, he has a history in being a pastor, but he's a spiritual director now. And anyway, has written quite a good book. I think I mentioned this in our reflection on the episode, but I think I'd like to read this book. I've got a sabbatical mm-hmm. coming up from the work that I do at church this summer. And I think I'd like to read it. It's called The Gift of Restlessness. And I think it's a really interesting take on themes of like irritation, you know, like I used to think that irritation was just bad. I shouldn't be irritated at things and I should just get rid of that. But Casey's book kind of talks about that as like, that's a manifestation of restlessness and you should pay attention to it because there's a reason that it's there. And, you know, anyway, seems like a good thing for me to read on totally. A sabbatical for some reason. So yeah. Figure out why I'm so irritated with everything.
Please.
Oh,
please
only do. Joking.
Ben,
only
smile.
Joking.
You matter.
Oh, thank you. This is also what I'm going to be meditating on my sabbatical.
We'll just circle back anyway. Around.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a good book. Anything else we need to say about this interview, y'all? Or can we get
no,
into it?
But this is like the 16th interview in a row, I think, where I just make a mistake. You know, and we could edit out.
Oh, you made a mistake on this one?
Well, I thought Casey was from Colorado Springs. For sure. I was like certain he was. And then he's like, no, Chicago. And I'm like, okay, same difference. Yeah. You know, they're totally not the same thing at all.
Starts with a C.
Right. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think I just want the listener to know that we really take seriously our responsibility to bring you professional content here on the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Well, anyway, it's a kind of professional content. Anyway, hey. Casey Tigrette joins us today on the Gravity Podcast. Casey is a speaker and he is the director of spiritual direction practice for Soul Care, which helps church and nonprofit leaders restore health to their souls. He's the author of Becoming Curious and the Practice of Remembering and is the host of the Otherwise Podcast. He and his family live in South Suburban Chicago and his new book that we're talking about today is called The Gift of Restlessness, A Spirituality for Unsettled Seasons. Casey, welcome back to the Gravity Podcast.
It's good to be with you all again. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about your other two books and spiritual direction, spiritual formation in general. We were just commiserating. It was about 3 years ago. So
time flies, man.
A lot has happened. Your other books, Casey, are about spiritual formation. This is kind of the work that you do day in, day out now. And I'm wondering, like, how this became your thing? How did this become important to you?
Oh my goodness! I think that the easiest way to go about that is I felt from when I was in high school, I had one of those prototypical evangelical youth group experiences where we were at a big conference and it was everybody's super pumped and let's all mm-hmm. do something big. And I was a senior in high school and I decided I felt this call, this invitation to be a pastor. And so went through the machinations of doing that and ended up pastoring a church. But in the middle of study and preparation, there were some of these voices that really started to appeal to me. People like Henry Nouwen and Brendan Manning and Thomas Merton, who were talking about less about the sort of get out of hell free kind of faith and more about the who are you becoming kind of faith. And so I started to really see the value of the spiritual formation discussion, and that led me to lead to other people. But then the second half of that was working with people in churches and knowing that I wasn't really good at counseling so much. but I was really attuned to sitting with them and hearing where God was present or absent, where certain practices were changing them, or where their character was an obstacle, and developing character would have been a huge gift for them. And that has kept me in the spiritual formation discussion, and seeing just the gap in our cultural national faith of focus on formation. It's either a lot of times adherence to certain beliefs, or it's being with the right people, or even voting the right way instead of who is it that you're becoming. And when I've been able to help people into that journey of becoming, it's been so much more fruitful. And so that's what keeps me interested in that particular conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate sharing that. I resonate with that. I resonate with it because I think it mirrors my own story. Like I've been a pastor for a long time, but very early on sort of learned about spiritual formation primarily from Richard Foster and Dallas Willard. And I just sort of assumed that was ministry, you know, and I ended up getting confused when there was such a thing as like a spiritual formation pastor. I was like, oh, isn't that just what a pastor is supposed to do? So anyways, learning a lot about that gap as well has made me very interested in this conversation and in this process.
Yeah, I've started to feel like we buried the lead a little bit. Like, formation is the good news. And to say anything less is kind of short selling people on.
Yeah,
on
I love
possible.
That way of putting it. Yeah, formation is the good news.
But
the kind of people we can become.
I don't want to be the squeaky wheel, but Casey, if that's the good news, my church won't grow as fast.
I know, and you'll have to be okay with that. But and, who they'll become? Oh, come on,
and
they are going to be some of the greatest people ever.
And I can't.
Matt, you're getting spiritually directed right now.
yes, I'll Venmo you later. I can't be a total jerk and point to the numbers of people in my church as evidence that God is still at work. Like there is so much about what you're saying, Casey, that would unwind and subvert the ways we gather and organize and conceive of ourselves as Christians.
It would. I mean, first and foremost, that spiritual formation has a deadly allergy to narcissism. There just isn't space. And so something has to be sacrificed. And with the, I mean, this is a whole podcast probably, but just the discussions around leadership and community and liturgy and formation and the clashing, the cracking together of what happens when we have a culture that creates not people of character, but people of celebrity or notoriety. And we tend to say, well, it's going to make Christianity laughable or whatever. Maybe, but I think worse than that, it's going to make communities of people who think that that's the thing.
Yeah.
And so do you want to have one person who's drunk the Kool-Aid on the celebrity thing, or a whole culture of people who have? Yeah. Like we've missed the fact that every celebrity pastor has a celebrity following, and their character is being shaped into that, where the metrics of success and the visibility and all of the pieces that go along with it. And, you know, there's a restlessness there because you're right. It will change the way we think about just about everything related to the interplay of Christian life with others.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that word restlessness. Your new book is all about restlessness. We mentioned before that you've been on the podcast to talk about the place of curiosity in spiritual formation and remembering. Memory and spiritual formation, and this new book is about restlessness and how it can be a gift for our formation. What do you mean when you say restlessness? What are you talking about in this book?
I'm talking about the place where we get to, and I think the best way to capture it is a phrase that's a lot of times attributed to bartenders, which is, you know, at closing time, a bartender will say, "You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here." Yeah. I think there's some of that that's true of restlessness, except I would say it this way. You can't go back, but you have no idea what going forward looks like. There are moments in life where we can't go back to before, before we said what we were thinking rather than thinking about what we were saying, or things like that, before cancer, before pandemic, before our faith shifted. We can't go back. But at the same time, we have no idea now what it looks like to move forward. And we're sort of stuck in this present tense, in this irritated, unsettled spot where a lot of the coping mechanisms, a lot of the things that we've used in the past to manage and navigate life and faith and relationships have been stripped away. And we can't rely on the same things that used to get us through. And so that restlessness makes us think something needs to change, or everything needs to change. And for me, this has been a very personal book, maybe more personal than the other books that I've written, because it's something that I've always lived with and experienced, whether it's a garden variety kind of thing where I'm like, something needs to change, so I'm going to grow some facial hair. And my wife is like, what are you doing?
Wait a minute.
Listener, you can't see, but Matt has grown a mustache for Easter. So,
not enough facial hair. I think you're getting spiritually formed right now to grow the rest of it.
Casey, yeah. Do you notice the crises that my mustache creates for Christy and Ben? There's a bit of I wish them rest, but there's less than rest. We could say that it makes them restless.
Oh, yeah. Which is a gift, Matt, for you.
This'll preach.
It's a spiritual formation machine, this thing.
It's glorious. It really is beautiful. It's a beautiful work you've done there, Matt. Bravo.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Yeah. This is how I'm working out my salvation, fear and trembling. Yeah. Right here.
Casey, you don't know this, but we brought you on to actually do an intervention for Matt, but you're not doing your job by complimenting his mustache.
I had no idea there was so much animosity about the.
I should have let you know
about the mustache, but that garden variety level of I just need to change something about my routines or my habits or my to the some people are I need to change my relationship or my vocation or my community that I'm a part of, and restlessness inspires that, and so it's part of our human development. It's that idea of our fight or flight responses kick in, and we're like, so we either need to fight this restlessness and beat it, or we need to give into it and let cynicism run right over top of us, or we find our ways of coping with it and compensating. So whether that's medicating, whether that's self-medicating, whatever it might be. And those options never seem to pan out the way that we think they will. So there has to be a different map. There has to be a different way that we move through restless seasons. And I think there's a way we do it that actually can become a gift to us if we're willing to receive it.
Mm. And now a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Casey, you frame this book around six human questions that arise from the phrases of the Lord's Prayer. Where do I belong? What am I here for? Is there enough for me? Can things be mended? Will we be protected? And can we be rescued? I'm curious to hear from you, which question was most difficult for you to write about? You said this is a more personal book. Tell us which one was more difficult and why.
I think there were a couple of them that were really difficult. maybe three. That's an Enneagram 4 answer, isn't it? You asked me for one response, and I'm like, let me give you three.
Give me three.
Because that's what you really wanted to ask. Was.
Hey, as an Enneagram 3, as long as you answer the question, I can check it off, right?
I just want you to know, Casey, I've prepared these people really well to receive,
we have another Enneagram 4.
To receive you. Or it, maybe I've just scorched earth. You can decide.
I feel like I owe you a lot, Matt. I feel like you and I owe you so much just for the you know, the beautiful facial hair and the preparation and the it's just like to feel this deep connection with you that I didn't feel before, but I'm glad it's there.
I'm going to hide this all in my heart. All of it.
Yeah. Treasure this.
I will.
Treasure this up in your heart. Do it.
Christy, Ben, we don't need you anymore. Casey. sorry, you were saying something about being an Enneagram 4 and how one of these phrases was.
Three
of the chapters were hard. Anyway,
I can elaborate on that because I think the conversation in one of the chapters around belonging, I think that's a constant. There is always a sense of finding new connections to God, self, and others and trying to navigate what those look like. Working as a spiritual director, I'm also helping people find their way through faith changes, relational changes, those things. So I think that one is a consistent one. Mm-hmm. But from a very relevant and at the time kind of thing, I wrote the basic premise of this book in 2019 and then put it away because I shopped it to publishers and did the whole thing, and it just wasn't time. So I thought, well, we'll, you know, put this away. We'll come back to it later. And then 2020 happened, and I didn't want it to be a pandemic book, but I don't think there's a personal story we can tell now without that being the background or the backdrop. Yeah, yeah. But it did frame both the universal in that we all had this experience together. Yeah. And then there were the particulars of how that my family, my vocation shifted inside of that time. And so in that sense, the two chapters on protection and rescue might have been the hardest to write just because there was a lot of, I felt that very acutely, the need to say, there's a lot of vulnerability that I've had to explore in the last 3 years. And there's a lot of places where I feel like I have gotten out into the wilderness, lost, and needed to know, is someone or something going to rescue me from this, from where I've gone to? And the restlessness starts in saying yes, but not in the way you thought, and probably not yet. It's going to look different than you thought it was going to look. So can you sit in the wilderness for a bit, knowing that help is on the way? And what do you learn? What do you learn while you're parked there with no options? And that's why one of the animating stories in the book for me is the story of Jesus in the wilderness, because it is a moment, and wilderness throughout the Christian scriptures is always about transformation, but it's also about you're just bare. Everything that you used to use to cope and all that, it's just gone. And so you're naturally going to become something different as a result of that experience. And when Jesus has this temptation in the wilderness, he doesn't run, he doesn't flee, he doesn't invoke his mighty power to escape it. He simply rests in it. And I love the way Mark articulates it. He says that he was between the wild beasts and the angels. Yeah. And I feel like that's so, it just describes it so well. We're between this thing that we think is going to kill us. Like, this is the end, this is the threat, and the blessing and restoration and rescue. And Jesus just sits there and says, why don't you come, just let's sit here for a bit. Remain with me in between these things, because that's where the gift really is.
Yeah. Yeah. That chapter, will we be protected? You know, as you said, it's all about this need to feel safe and secure. And it's, you know, related to the petition, save us from the time of trial or lead us not into temptation. And I was just thinking about how it's often, I think, a fear of not being safe that drives people to act unjustly towards their neighbors, right? And so we see a lot of this, you know, with, I don't know, just there's stuff in the news every day, right? Gun violence and all kinds of other things that happen that are animated by this fear for my life, or I'm afraid I'm not going to be protected. And I think it's really compelling what you are talking about, where Jesus is able to notice that vulnerability, but not necessarily act in a way to eliminate the vulnerability, right? I think that's one of the ditches, right, to fall into.
Yeah.
And then the other ditch is to just sort of despair, perhaps, and just assume that, you know, the beasts are going to have their way with me. In that chapter, you mentioned this mantra of saying, of course. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how that functions for you and how it was helpful for you in situations that made you feel uneasy or unsafe. And maybe just talk a bit more about what it takes for us to live in that tension of, you know, between the beasts and the angels.
Yeah. Well, fear, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because fear is that animating force that causes so many things to go off the rails. Mm-hmm. So this could be I don't want to drive too far down this road, but I do think the doctrine of original sin and total depravity have caused a ton of damage, more so maybe than even gifts, because they're attempting to explain evil in people, and I do understand that. But what it's done is it's gotten us to the place where we believe that people are just fundamentally evil. Yeah. Rather than that's a corruption of who they really are. And so it's hard to deal with fear if you believe that fear is your default setting. Because I've said, one of the things I like to roil people with is say, every human being is at the core good and kind. They're just very, very scared. Yeah. And it's fear that prompts a lot of the things we do that are terrifying and horrible. It's fear of losing place or posture. It's fear of losing position. It's fear of who am I going to be? Fear of losing that identity. And so one way to respond to that, and this is kind of a social media era thing, but this need for outrage. I need to be outraged by this thing. And I think we have a capacity for outrage, for righteous anger, but we don't have unlimited capacity. Mm-hmm. And so when I started to notice myself, like, I couldn't see 3 or 4 posts at a time. Now I get it. Like, you could just bail out of the whole thing. Totally understand that. And maybe that's still the option that a lot of us need to explore. But I found myself getting outraged about everything. And I thought, I can't live. This is unsafe for me to live in outrage about everything. Because I'm forgetting the things that really matter most, but also, like, I just don't have the energy. We're not built for that. Yeah. And so, credit where credit's due. The of course thing came from a podcast that I heard with Rob Bell, where he was talking about just saying of course to different things that happen. And for me, it's a way of managing reality and saying, yeah, human beings are incredibly frightened. Of course, we're going to be terrified by certain things, and we're going to act in ways that are contrary to the stuff we say we deeply believe in. And we're going to do that not because we believe something different, but because we're terrified of what might happen if we don't. Yeah. And there are a whole host of controversial things that I could bring up about that. but fear is that animating force. And so it's sort of the choice between, okay, my fear can, if I just give into it and I'll protect against it, that will rescue me. Because if not, right, if my fear comes true, that'll destroy me. And I think Jesus just kind of goes, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe if you just sat with those two things in tension for a while, you might learn that your fear isn't nearly as well-founded as you thought, and that there's actually a third option that you have, rather than just either this or this. There's actually probably a third way. Yeah. For handling this unsafe, unsettled season.
Yeah. It's really helpful. Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit here, Casey, because I'd love to explore all of these things in depth. We could do a whole podcast series, I think, on each chapter of this book. One thing, that's a super helpful. Another thing about maybe one of the other chapters that I wanted to ask you about, chapter before that called Can Things Be Mended, which is based from the petition for God to forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. Mm. And I thought it was interesting that you connected the idea of forgiveness to the idea of mending things. Because I think we often can maybe carry around a shallow idea of forgiveness that feels like the opposite of mending things, right? It's making excuses for broken things. It's letting people off the hook for breaking things. And so forgiveness in and of itself doesn't feel very powerful to us. But I appreciated the way that you talked about forgiveness in this chapter. You wrote that forgiveness is a posture through which the world is mended. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about that. Talk about the relationship between forgiveness and, say, justice, the mending of the world. How are they related?
Yeah, I feel like forgiveness is restoration and reconciliation in miniature. And so any of us who are hoping to do or live in a way that restores the world, that has a belief that God created things to be whole and full and integrated, to reunite all those pieces, forgiveness is kind of a small scale way of doing that. So in relational breaks, when we're able to take a step of releasing a person from guilt, not from consequences, but from guilt. And maybe that relationship isn't fully restored, but there's something that's restored there. If for nothing else, it's restored within ourselves. Because I'm a big proponent of Paul saying, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. There is a moment where this is no longer about you. Forgiveness is really about, I have come to the point of peace, and this other person now, if they meet me there, and there's always an incompleteness to that. There's like, it's never this perfect, you know, it all wraps up at the end of the sitcom kind of thing, you know? it's always a little more messy and it's always a little more fragmented. But that posture of seeing the world through the lens of forgiveness, through the lens of saying, we're all good and kind, but very scared. And in my fear, I have the propensity to do to them what they've done to me. If I take that posture towards the world, not in a shaming way, but just in an understanding kind of way, I will look at what's happened between us differently, small scale. But I'll also look at things differently, large scale, from, you know, whether it's a politician that I hold this unrealistic grudge about because I've never met them. Mm-hmm. The moment I see us identifying the same things, the same restlessness, all the questions that I bring up in the book, I feel like are very human. We all share those. Yeah. So doing the work of restoration and reconciliation in our relationships, even with someone who we've never met maybe, and just saying, I need to make peace with the fact that I'm angry at, you know, online news, cable news host number 6, or whoever we might say that is, I need to make peace with that, is just it's a posture. And a posture has to be revisited every day.
Yeah.
So when I'm walking with people in spiritual direction, they're working through forgiveness, I just tell them, like, today you will wake up and you'll be like, it's great. I've let them go. I've blessed them on their way. And then the next day you're going to wake up and go, I would give $5 just to punch that guy in the face. And it may be versions of that throughout. Mm-hmm. You know, you may go back and forth, but the posture is always coming back to, and what do I do with that?
Right.
I've let them go, I've released them, or I wish that their efforts would fail, you know, back and forth is a posture we take towards the world. And so that's the hardest part about forgiveness too, is that I think it is the most compelling story we've ever heard. When we see it on the news, when there's been a, you know, I think the one that comes to mind is the Nickel Mines shooting from way back. And this whole community of people forgave the person who shot their children and then grieved with that person's family. And we see that and we're like, that's amazing. That's so cool. That is just so powerful. Not cool. That's such a dumb word. It's so powerful. And it's changing. And if the world would just be more like this. And then the guy who cuts, you know, the person in our family that we've got this longstanding thing with, if we said, well, okay, now apply that here, we'd be like, I don't know. We're stuck between this is the most beautiful story I've ever heard, and it's kind of absurd that this would ever happen in reality.
Yeah.
And so that's the tension, I think, of forgiveness. And that's where, if we're going to be people who are living towards the mending of the world, that's where it happens. It's this amazing story, and there's some cynicism in us that it may ever happen at all.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be right back.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's get back to the show.
Casey, I think especially bringing together restoration and reconciliation into it as well, because I think it is, it's just some of the ideas we have about forgiveness are just that it just has to do with letting people run amok. But I hear you saying it also involves, it can also involve accountability, but it also, it goes beyond mere accountability. Into something deeper that maybe only God can accomplish in us. So
I feel like it always goes a little bit further than we want to, but not as far as we think it should. Mm. I think it's always a little less comfortable than forgiveness is always a little less comfortable than we would like, but not nearly as destructive as we think it might be or that we're afraid it might be.
You know, I find that it's hard for me to know when I've forgiven somebody. Like I actually don't know how to assess. I mean, I can tell myself I've forgiven somebody, but then when I wake up in the middle of the night with resentments or replays or revenge scenarios, then I'm like, well, I guess maybe I haven't forgiven. Or maybe I've forgiven some things and not other things. Or maybe I'm in the process of forgiving. I wonder, Casey, if you could speak to how do we know if we've forgiven someone?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I do think part of it depends on your someone. I love the teachings of Jesus, and I love the idea of loving your enemies. But there's a big lack of how. There's not a whole lot of practical in that. You know, like, love your enemies. And I'm sure one of the disciples, because they were annoying like this, were like, okay, so how do we do that? Mm-hmm. And I think Jesus' response would be, well, it kind of depends on your enemy. Yeah. What does love look like to that person? And so taking that and transporting it into your really good question, Matt, I think some of it has to do with being able to check in with ourselves and understand that forgiveness might never be complete. I tend to think it's less of a process and more of an address. It's a place where we live. We just stake out our claim that I'm going to live in a constant push and pull of forgiving this person over time. And it may take time, depending on it depends on your someone. It depends on the wound. It depends on the relational connection and interaction. For some people, it depends on whether that person is still alive. You know, if a long dead family member has wounded you, I mean, how do you do forgiveness for someone who's not even here to be a part of it? Yeah. So I diagnostically, it could be asking yourself, you know, when you have those revenge fantasies or whatever, it might just be a candid conversation with God about what is that about? Like, where is that coming from? Is that really resentment, or is that I just don't feel ready to have that person actually thrive? And then the second step of that would be, how often am I able to, sometimes through gritted teeth, sometimes fairly easily, how often am I able to say, I pray for the best for that person? Not that they succeed in efforts to hurt, but I pray for the good of their family, their children, their whatever they're trying to achieve. If we can step into that practice more and more frequently, I think that's a sign that we're moving towards And it may be, you know, Monday through Thursday you're there, and then Friday you have a bottom out and you're like, I just want terrible things to happen to them. It is this push and pull. And I think allowing ourselves the freedom to live in the push and pull with that, like, today we're good. I don't know about tomorrow. I'll worry about that later. Today I'm able to say, God bless that person and bless them wildly, not in their evil, but in their good. And the more we're able to live into that, then it doesn't become a what I've done. It becomes a, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. I want to just punctuate, maybe summarize and synthesize what you said, Casey, because I think it's such a helpful reframing of how I asked the question. So I'm receiving what you said as maybe a more important question for the Christian isn't, have I forgiven or not? And how do I know? But it's, hey, will you meet with God in that question? Like, will you allow that question to be an altar on which you offer your body? And I think that I come back over and over again to, there are portals between heaven and earth all around our lives, and we often don't see them as such because we're caught up in trying to get answers to questions that are less important than, will you meet with God here? And so I really appreciated the way that you carefully reframed that for me. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's the reason I love Celtic spirituality, honestly, is because Celtic spirituality just, the Celts are so fun. The history of Celtic spirituality is so fun they really are, and they're all like symbols and things. But they just had no patience for like formulaic nonsense because they were so trying to stay where you're talking about. Yeah. You know, the church in the West showed up in Ireland. And we're like, so we have, my name's Augustine and I have this theology. And they were like, "Nah, we're good, actually. Thanks. Y'all can keep that over on the other island. We got a good thing going here. Earth, sun, Trinity, whole thing." But it's that presence, and it's reminding ourselves that presence is 190%, 99% of what it means to be faithful.
In a similar way, as you guys have been talking, I feel I have like a whole page of notes that I'm writing on, because even going back to what the book as a whole about restlessness, I don't like it. I don't like feeling uncomfortable. Yeah. I want to figure it out. Like I want there to be an answer, right? Like I don't want it to be a process.
Yes.
And you say that it's a gift. For us in our faith to walk it out, I don't want that gift, like, if I'm really honest, right? And yet I think even in this conversation personally, I'm challenged. Okay, God, what does it mean to just meet with you in the fact that I just want to have arrived somewhere? Like, yeah. I don't want to be in this place. And I don't know. I wonder if you have anything more to say about that, just because maybe I just need a little encouragement or something, because I'm like spiraling in the sense of like, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what it means other than every day to wake up and say, God, I'm going to meet with you. I want like an embodied participation of what it means to actually walk with you in the midst of my restlessness.
Yeah. Christy, it's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. I the one thing that tipped me off on this, because I don't want it. I don't want the restlessness that I even write about, that I call a gift. I'm not interested in that. But that doesn't necessarily matter, because what I've found is that, interested or not, it's coming. And there's a little nuance in the story of Jesus and the temptation in the wilderness that I had missed. And it stood out when I was working on this book, is right after Jesus' baptism, it says that Jesus was led into the wilderness. And that's such a simple word, but it means that it wasn't his idea. Yeah. And so I think there is that sense that restless moments are things that we are often led into, sometimes kicking and screaming and against our will, that we don't really want. So if we're going into this place that we don't, where we don't want to be, and we're being led there, if God can be present there, then there is something we can gain from it. That when everything is, when all of our normal stuff is stripped away, our normal plans and processes and coping mechanisms are stripped away, there is a way that we get to see ourselves really clearly. We get to integrate and interrogate where our faith is going, how we really feel about that other person, how we really feel about ourselves. I think a lot of times restless moments are about reckoning with the junk that's in us. Sometimes we were never given the ability to understand. Like, I think faith, the evangelical faith I was raised in, was really good at helping me understand how to think about God and everybody else. But when it came to me, it was like, you're a sinner bound for hell. So that's about all we need to say about that. Mm-hmm. But we are eternal, evolving, eternal spiritual beings. Like that, there's so much more to that.
Yeah.
And it's wilderness that gives you the chance to go, what else is in here? I don't want to be here anyway, but since we're here, what is rolling around in me that I need to wrestle with? But I hope that rehabs a little bit of the idea of what restlessness can be, just knowing that it's something we're all going to face at one time or another.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, it's really good, Casey. This has been a really rich conversation, and I appreciate you spending some time with us and our listeners today.
Thank you guys for the invitation and for your gracious questions. And thank you, Matt, for the mustache just for me.
Just for Casey.
Yeah, this mustache.
I
want to be clear. This mustache is for the whole world. But Casey, if it was only you in the world, I would still have this mustache.
If just one person is benefited by your mustache, then it was worth it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Casey, where can our listeners connect with you? Where can they find you? Social media.
Yes.
Tell us your places.
Yeah. So my website, caseytigrit.com, just my name.com. And if there's any interest in spiritual direction or resources like that, the organization I work with, soulcare.com, is another place where you can find some of the things that I do. Instagram and Facebook, I'm there as well, at caseytigrit. So I'd be happy to interact and chat and share ridiculous pictures of whatnot. So.
Okay. Well, again, listeners, the book is called The Gift of Restlessness, A Spirituality for Unsettled Seasons. Casey, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, guys.
We're counting down. Three.
Well,
two. I don't know how to open it, though.
Think, Christy, we could just share... Like what are the things that came up for us? Like where do we feel restless and what came up for us from that interview?
Yeah. I mean, I asked him that question because I don't like feeling restless. It kind of eats away at me, honestly, in small things and in big things. And for you listeners, before we hit record, I was telling Matt, I don't know, maybe a week ago we recorded a podcast with Justin McRoberts, and you made a mistake in the title of his book. Yes. And I kind of joked about it and made fun of you. And it's been eating at me. And I was like, I need to just say, I'm sorry. I don't even know if he's offended by that, but I don't think that was super kind. And so I said that to you. You were super kind to say you forgive me. And
I do forgive you. You're released from feeling like you're in my debt or somehow impugned me with your sarcastic comment. But I don't remember what you said at all, Christy. And I have no shame. So I can... I'm just kidding. I do have shame, a lot of it. But no, I don't remember it. But here's the thing. The deep irony is, Christy, that if you would have... If Vegas would have had odds on who will need to apologize to whom first in this relationship on this podcast, it would have been me apologizing to you for some sarcastic, goober-headed comment. But anyway, I appreciate you saying that, but I be at rest.
Yeah. Well, and I did say like if and when, because I think it is when, not if, one of us offends the other person, that you know, we would take responsibility and apologize, but that if somehow we haven't thought about it, we haven't been convicted about it, that the other person would come and say, hey, that hurt me. And there would be an openness of communication in that way. And I experienced that with you guys. But I just kind of restated it.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm into that too, Christy. Let's all put our hands in.
Yeah.
You know, go team. Yeah. just a reflection too, just on the fact that Matt, you were not offended or hadn't thought about it. Your feelings weren't hurt. I think it's interesting though, that I think it's still valuable for you to say it, Christy, because you felt it, right?
Yes.
And even though it wasn't like objectively speaking, you hadn't actually hurt Matt's feelings. It was important for you to say what you said, because you were worried about it. It was, you know, it was sort of eating at you. And so I think that's an interesting example. It's a small way that a kind of restlessness moves you towards communion, right? And reconciliation. And even though it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
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 Yes.
Yeah. I appreciated Casey's book. And I appreciated that conversation. I mentioned this before we hit record, so it didn't, so I'll mention it now because we're actually recording for this outro. But I think that, you know, I'm taking a little sabbatical from church work. So listener Matt and I are both bivocational pastors. And so we spend about half our time on Gravity, about half our time in the church. But June and July are going to be sabbatical months for me from church work. And I was actually thinking about getting his book to read through during those months, just because, it was an interesting, I have noticed some of what he talks about as restlessness in me for a few years now. Just a sense that something's shifting or something's changing. And I don't really know, you know, how big or small it all is, but, I've just had that, I have had one of those senses, and I've had senses like this previously in my life. And, I don't know, they just usually indicate some sort of changes on the horizon. So anyway, I think if you're feeling that way about your life, I think this book would really be a really,
if only there was some way we could get it into their hands.
Good. Wow. That was a great segue.
Just a reminder.
Yeah. Just a reminder of what we mentioned in the intro, that we are giving away, the publisher Broadleaf has graciously offered to send 2 free copies of this book to people who want them. So if you are that person and would like to read this book and would like to receive a free copy, you can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Make sure to include your physical mailing address, and any emails we get, we'll throw into a proverbial hat and pick 2 random winners. And we'll let you know via email, and we'll send you a copy of Casey's book.
And we can probably do sound effects when we like pick the names or something.
Maybe that's a great idea.
Like, maybe we should. Or something.
Yeah.
You've got some sound effects, Ben, you can pull
out. I do. I have some sound effects. I'm just going to try one right now.
Okay. And the winner is... turned up.
But I don't know what... I don't have the buttons labeled, so let's see what happens.
This is sound effect roulette.
Let's see what this button does. Hey!
Yay!
Oh, boy.
This is how people know we're pros.
Hey,
I haven't labeled the buttons. Don't hit that button.
I need to circle back to a comment you made about. We talked about my mustache a bit, and the podcast,
we did. Did
no, Do no, I need Christy, to apologize no, Christy. For that there's too?
Okay, good.
It's how I carry my cross. My mustache is my cross, and then any flack I get is just carrying it for you, carrying it for me. Yeah, but like in the past, this has brought some real division between Sharon and I. She really hates my mustache, and now I feel like it hasn't this time. She hasn't even brought it up, and she actually told me this week that she feels like I've really grown as a person. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, well, her actual words were, you're getting fat, but I know what she meant.
Oh my goodness.
Now that I know where these buttons are, I think I can do the sound effects a lot
more. Yeah, good job. Good job.
What?
Okay. If anybody says anything scary.
All right, well, we should get out of here.
So jokes, scary. Yeah, we should. Before I hit, let me just hit the orange button. Okay, some giggles. It's nice.
Yeah, there you go.
For jokes. All right. Wow, that just keeps going, that laughter.
Until next time.
All right, friends. We good to go? Until next time, listener. Great to be with you. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
You can join our Gravity community for free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles that we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sturkey and Matt Tebby. Aaron Sturkey edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his work at aaronsturkey.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.